This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. In her new novel, Mehdi Ivy Harrison takes us inside the Mormon Church to explore broader themes of patriarchy and social order. The Bishop's Wife is a mystery set in Mormon community of Draper, Utah. This is Mehdi's first adult novel. Until now, she's published a number of young adult romances. Mehdi Ivy Harrison will be reading at McIntyre's Books on Saturday, but first she joins us to talk about her novel and her sharp turn to adult fiction. Mehdi, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Tell us about this. The Bishop's Wife now is a mystery, but can you tell us what inspired the novel?
Yes, it was partly inspired by the real-life case of Josh and Susan Powell, which happened in Utah several years ago. It played out in the media for a couple of years. Originally, Josh Powell said that his wife had left him in the middle of the night on a very cold January. And as the police investigated, they discovered that he had gone on a long car trip. He said it was a camping trip with his two young sons, who I think at the time were 2 years old and 4 years old. And the idea that he had gone camping with them in the middle of winter in Utah was so ridiculous that people began to be immediately suspicious of him and his wife's disappearance. Nobody could find where she had gone. There was no evidence that she had gone off to a lover, as he insisted that she had. And gradually, as the police investigated her journals, her emails to her family, it became clear that she had been afraid for her life and that she had been in a terribly abusive marriage. But the police never found her body, and a couple of years after Josh's custody of his children had been taken away and was finally returned to him, and the whole story ended horribly with him committing suicide and killing his two sons by blowing up his house. And we still don't know where the body of his wife is, but it seems pretty clear what happened.
Now, this is, of course, the grist of a novel and a wonderful one, but you set it in a very particular place in a very particular time. The bishop's wife in your novel is Linda Walheim. Tell us about her.
Linda is an older woman. She's in her 50s. She has five grown children. Her youngest son is just finishing his senior year in high school. And she is sort of an invisible person, even within the Mormon community. People come and ask her for advice, but she doesn't have authority as her husband does. And I wanted to tell a story about a character who was a stay-at-home mom. She doesn't have a job, but who is able to get into situations that other people wouldn't be able to get into precisely because she's overlooked and because she doesn't have power. People are not suspicious of her, and they tell her secrets that they probably wouldn't tell anybody else.
Can I get you to read for us? And maybe we'll expand that if I can ask you to read from the beginning of the novel.
Yes. Okay, this is the first chapter. Mormon Bishop's Wife isn't an official calling. Bishop's Wife isn't a position listed on Word documents. There's no ceremonial laying on of hands or pronounced blessings from on high. But if the bishop is the father of the ward, the bishop's wife is the mother. And that meant there were 500 people who were under my care. I was used to the phone calls in the middle of the night, to the doorbell ringing far too late and far too early. I was used to being looked past because I was never the person that they were there to see. This morning, at the 6:30 doorbell, I shook Kurt. "They'll be wanting the bishop," I said. I was already out of bed and putting on my robe. "I'll be there as soon as I can, Linda," he said sleepily. He hadn't been to bed before midnight last night, I was sure. I hurried downstairs, sure that something terrible had happened. It was late January in Draper, Utah, and as picturesque as the snow on the mountains was, it did not mix well with our modern lifestyle. My fear, as I stood hesitating at the door, was that someone was here to tell us that a teenager from the ward had skidded off the road and was on his way to the hospital. The doorbell rang again, and then the door was knocked on impatiently. When I finally opened the door, I saw Jared Helm, one of the newer members of the ward, carrying his 5-year-old daughter, Kelly. She had curly blonde hair that always seemed messy, no matter how often it was combed. The remains of breakfast, oatmeal, were all over her chin. She was still in her pajamas, but she'd been bundled into an inside-out snowsuit. How her father had figured out how to get the zipper up without putting it on the right way around, I didn't know. "Can I see Bishop Walheim?" asked Jared. "Not an accident, then," I thought with relief. "Come in from the cold. He's awake, and he'll be down in a minute," I assured Jared.
That is Mehdi Ivy Harrison reading from The Bishop's Wife, her new novel. She's going to be reading at McIntyre's Books in Pittsburgh on Saturday. So she's living in the shadow of her husband, the bishop, but that doesn't mean she doesn't have an independent idea about what's going on, and it's very different as this mystery unfolds, her ideas about what might be happening over and against what her husband and perhaps the other men of this community the way they might see what's going on.
Yes, she's initially very suspicious of Jared. She cannot believe that another mother would leave a young child like this. And her husband basically tells her to keep out of this, and in part because he thinks she's wrong, but also in part because he's worried about her safety. And she is just driven by this need to help this girl and also ultimately to help this young mother that she feels so strongly about.
You were raised in a Mormon household, and this is certainly the bishop's wife, a Mormon bishop. To what extent are we brought inside the Mormon church? How much of that is actually revealed in this? And how important is it to us as readers that we know these things?
Well, it's very much a mystery, and there is a mystery plot very strongly in the book. But I wrote this book because I really wanted to talk about Mormonism in a way that I don't know that it has been talked about before. There are exposés out there talking about how horrible Mormonism is. And within the Mormon church, there's a publishing community where people write stories about Mormons. And the Mormons are almost always perfect or very close to perfect. And I feel like in order to get people to see Mormons as we really are and actually to sympathize with us, it's important to show, you know, the whole breadth of evil to, you know, flawed but good people that I have in this book. And so far it's had a very good response nationally from non-Mormons, and I've been very happy about that.
How about in the Mormon community or Mormon communities? I'm sure there's a variety of opinions. What have you heard?
It's been more varied within the Mormon community. I have gotten some really wonderful emails from bishops and bishops' wives who have told me that they don't know how I did it. I am not a bishop's wife. I've never been a bishop's wife, but they feel like I've gotten right into how it feels like to be a bishop or a bishop's wife in the book. So that's been gratifying. There have been people who feel like I am tearing down the church, people who've said that with members like me, we don't need enemies, and people who feel like it's a very anti-men. And those are responses that I actually expected. I think that people within the Mormon church aren't used to seeing themselves reflected in this way, and it may take some time for them to see that this is not a hit piece.
Well, it's interesting because male patriarchy is in your sights in this book as a theme, if I'm fair in observing that. And certainly male patriarchy is not unique to Mormonism at all. This is the problem of 21st century life in America and probably the West and elsewhere. So to what extent then does it help us does it help us to frame this in terms of, you know, sort of Mormon communities?
Well, I mean, I think that's one of the reasons people connect to it is that patriarchy is everywhere and people are used to seeing patriarchy. All I'm doing is showing patriarchy within Mormonism. I think that it's useful to see how patriarchy works. I don't think that patriarchy is always bad. And I think that this book shows clearly Linda is very fond of her relationships with the men in her lives, in her life. And she is very... she sees both the good and the bad in patriarchy. She sees that some very good men, when they have power, that they use it wisely, but it's rare. I think that she is honest when she sees that people who have power tend to abuse it. And again, that's something that exists in all parts of the world, not just in Mormonism, not even in America.
Right. I mean, if it's built into the structure, it's bound to be abused. And so if you don't examine the structure, whatever it is, and when it's patriarchy, it's going to go awry and it's going to hurt people who aren't privileged by it. I mean, I think that's part of it. But she sees the good in individuals, and that's one of the more, as you say, the more nuanced parts of the book, that some individuals can escape the structure. But
yes, and I also think that patriarchy, it doesn't just benefit the men in these situations. It actually... It corrupts them. It really ruins their lives as much as it ruins the lives of the women in the book. And I think that's one of the honest things about looking at patriarchy. It's easy to say, oh, well, men benefit by patriarchy. And they do, but they are also ruined by it.
Well, maybe I can get you to read for us again, and this might help us understand, too. It would be a pretty good example of some of what Linda has to confront as she moves through this mystery. Will you read for us?
Yes, this is the beginning of chapter 6, so it's a few pages into the book. The press conference with the Westons appeared on local television, on Mormon church-owned KSL of all stations, at noon the next day. The two parents stood together in a picture of marital harmony in front of their local church, which looked much the same as ours. Aaron Weston did most of the speaking, as he had at our house. Kurt was at work, and I was sure he was fielding plenty of calls there. But within minutes of the end of the conference, I had to deal with the frightened women of the ward who suddenly thought Jared Helm was a danger to them. The truth was, Jared Helm wasn't a danger to anyone anymore, except perhaps his own daughter. The real danger to the women in the ward was the same danger they had faced yesterday and the day before that and ever since they were married, their own husbands. I am a happily married woman myself, but marriage is a dangerous covenant. When both people are honest and good, it is still difficult to live together so intimately day in and day out. But no one is perfectly good or honest, and so marriage becomes a dance over hot coals and metal spikes. We contort ourselves trying to disguise one habit or another, trying to pretend to love one part or another of our partners that we don't, all so that we can get along. Privacy cannot exist in a marriage, even when it should, even when it is healthy, and just as dangerous is the legal bind we are in. Shared finances may be fine when people have similar habits, but when they do not? And none of this begins to address the difficulty that is expounded when a marriage produces a family. I know from personal experience that marriage can be a holy institution, blessed by God. I have felt moments of perfect bliss and contentment with my husband. I have been expanded in many ways by being yoked to someone who is so different, and I am glad for those chances. But there are twice as many occasions when I shake my head and wonder if we would be happier if we could only live together as friends, or be business partners, or share parental responsibilities. Does it always have to be a marriage, everything shared and stirred together?
Mehdi Ivy Harrison reading from her novel, The Bishop's Wife. She'll be at McIntyre's Books in Pittsburgh on Saturday, right now with us live on The State of Things. So tell us a little bit more about that last line. Does it always have to be a marriage, everything shared and stirred together? Anything in it particularly that we should know about Mormon marriage, or are you talking about marriage in general?
Well, I think marriage in general is tricky. Mormon marriage is probably particularly fraught with pressure to be perfect. I think that that's one of the things I'm getting at in the book is, and one of the things I'm destroying is this idea that Mormons are perfect or force themselves to be perfect. No one is perfect. And I don't think Mormons have a greater claim to it than anyone else. But Mormons do believe that marriages will be eternal and that the family unit is eternal and that heaven will be about families rather than about being angels or even worshiping Christ. Mormons believe very strongly that marriage is something that everyone will eventually have. Even those who are single and in this life will not are not married will be married in heaven because that's the order of the universe according to Mormon doctrine. Even God is married. There's a heavenly father and a heavenly mother who are both gods for us.
Well, this order and social structure also plays a very important part in the novel. The bishop's wife, Linda Walheim, uses her role as the bishop's wife to sort of bring baked goods and kind of inspect the houses and comfort those families and those women who are in that ward. But it also gives her access that otherwise other folks might not have, right?
Yeah, I mean, she is... I don't know that all bishops' wives or even any bishops' wives actually do what Linda does in taking people cinnamon rolls and offering to babysit their kids. And then when they're gone, rummaging through their filing cabinets and finding out all their secrets. But, you know, this is a novel and I'm trying to tell an interesting mystery story as well as get at the realistic lives of Mormons. So I think she's a really interesting character in that she puts herself on the line for the people in her ward. And even if she doesn't have an official calling, she cares about these people deeply. And she feels like she is a mother to these people and that gives her a great responsibility over them.
You talked about the news story that got you going in this novel, but you also had a personal crisis of faith that is, I think, plays a part in this novel. Am I right?
Yes. Actually, the first draft of this book did not have Linda losing a child. It was as I was looking back, my editor suggested that I needed to figure out why Linda was so driven. And I realized that the reason that Linda was so driven to help people and to figure out this crime is the same reason that I was driven to write the book. I lost my sixth child in 2005 to stillbirth. I was overdue, 41 plus weeks pregnant, and I just woke up one morning and the baby's heartbeat had died. We never figured out what had happened. I went to the hospital and was induced, and the baby was delivered, and we had to go home without our child that we'd waited for. We went home to a nursery. Everything was prepared for. Our kids, our other five children, had been waiting for months. We kept telling them, after the baby's born, we'll do this and that. It was heartbreaking. And in the months that followed, I really tried to hold to my faith, but found myself just really struggling with people who told me that my daughter had died because I had some lesson that I needed to learn, that God had wanted this to happen. And I ended up just being unable to believe in a God who had planned for this to happen. And I just consciously made a decision. I'm not going to believe in God anymore. And I spent about 5 years really being an atheist within the Mormon Church, watching people do things. I felt sometimes a bit like a robot, and felt also like other people were robots, that we were interacting with each other in this weird, artificial way, as if they wanted me to fulfill a certain function, but didn't really care about what I thought. I was very angry that people didn't realize how much I was hurting. And writing this book was actually one of my first steps to try to come back to the church. I created Linda because I wanted to figure out if there was a kind of a Mormon woman who I wanted to become and I could believe in and try to work towards. And really, the book has worked that way, that I have come closer to the faith because of writing the book.
Mehdi, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Mehdi Ivy Harrison is the author of the new book, The Bishop's Wife. She's going to be doing a reading at McIntyre's Books in Pittsburgh Saturday, January 10th. You can get more information at our website, stateofthings.org. And thank you for listening. We've got lots of information there, stateofthings.org. It's a program produced by Laura Lee, Anita Rao, Hadi Mawagdi, and Will Michaels. Robin Copley's our technical director. Brent Wolf is WUNC's news director. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.